Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com and the author of the Prayer Prescription Series. The Prayer Prescription Series is the sponsor of this show. Please go to katelovingschenck.com to receive a book I wrote called The Self-Healing Manifesto. My guest today is Mark Allen. Mark is the author of many books, but his most recent is The Magical Path. He also edited a book by Israel Regarde entitled The Art of True Healing. This book goes into great detail about what is called the middle pillar meditation, which was originally offered to the world in 1932 by Israel Regarde himself. Please join me in welcoming Mark Allen. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Kate.
Welcome again. It's wonderful to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I was curious how you came upon the book, The Art of True Healing. It's a really wonderful gem of a piece of art, you know?
It is a wonderful book, and I included almost the entire work in my book, The Magical Path, because it's so short. But I first encountered it in Madison, Wisconsin. I had just left college. I'd gotten into a theater company. I was an actor and a musician with a theater company. We toured the country. We played off-Broadway for a while. I remember we played in Madison, Wisconsin, and I had an afternoon free, and I was just wandering around the town alone, and I saw this little bookshop filled with nothing but books on Western magic. And I walked in, and I cannot describe the feelings I had very well, but part of me said, this is really interesting stuff, and part of me was totally overwhelmed with thousands of volumes, some of them with thousands of pages, huge amounts of material, and there was this quiet, bearded guy sitting in a corner behind a desk, and turned out he was the owner, and I went and just said to him, how do I get started in studying this? And he chuckled and offered me a chair. And he proceeded to give me about an hour-long course, an introduction to Western magic. And I left with an armful of books, some big ones that I never touched. Full disclosure, my study of Western magic was very sporadic and intuitive and lazy, basically. I'm lazy. But the little book on the top was called The Art of True Healing by Israel Regarde, and that was the first one I picked up because it was so short. And right away, within the first sentence, he had me. And right away, there's a very simple meditation. The first sentence of the book, he doesn't have an introduction or anything. He just starts saying, with this quote, within every man and woman is a force that directs and controls the entire course of life. Properly used, it can heal every affliction and ailment we may have. That's his opening sentence. Then he gives this simple meditation he calls the middle pillar meditation, where you basically just imagine healing light at the top of your head, at your crown, and then you just imagine the light descending through your entire body. He called it the middle pillar, and it goes back to the Kabbalah and the central pillar. Your body is the tree of life. Your body is the same as the entire universe, and its middle pillar is right down the center, and you just imagine healing light filling your entire body. And I started doing that. I was, I think, 21. I was in the worst health of my life. Leaving college, I was in horrible health. I'd done way too many amphetamines in college to get through the stress of college. And I was stressed. I had terrible headaches. I had periods of depression and anxiety. And I started doing this meditation. And it's one of the very few things I've done regularly throughout my life, because being lazy like I am, I do it flat on my back.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me an excuse to lay down. And so I do it 2, 3, 4 times a week, just laid flat on my back and imagine light descending through my whole body. And then sometimes I get into rhythmic breathing along with it. Then you send the energy. You can send it anywhere in your body to heal. And then you can even sit next to other people and heal them. And then mm-hmm. he goes on and on and on with the other things you can do with this energy in your body, including attracting wealth and abundance. So I started mm-hmm. doing that. It's a very simple exercise. It doesn't take much time. It's one of the few things I've done with regularity over the years. And looking back, I think it has been a powerful contributor to my perfect health. I'm 66 mm-hmm. years old now. I've been in perfect health since mm-hmm. I started doing it. I've brought abundance into my life by doing the exercise in that little book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a very powerful little thing to do.
Now, this energy that descends, do you also bring it back up again?
Yes, yes,
yeah.
yes. It descends from your crown down to the earth through your feet. He even actually, in fact, in rereading The Art of True Healing, as I did my book, I'd forgotten. He starts with the earth. The first meditation, he starts having you feel your feet in contact with the floor, if you're sitting, say,
mm-hmm.
and you feel the energy coming up from the earth, up through your body to the crown of your head, and then moving back down. But either way, over the years, I've modified it, so I always start with the crown of my head, just feeling the energy up there at the top of my head, and then you feel it descend right into your head, filling your entire head with healing energy. Then you feel it descend to your heart, filling it with healing energy, descend down through all your digestive organs, and then your reproductive organs, and then finally down to your feet in the earth.
I guess another variation could be to have the energy descend into each chakra system as well. I mean, what you just said did cover all the chakras, but the
yes.
chakra system is at with the colors of each energy center.
Exactly, and I talk about that in The Magical Path. He
mm-hmm.
has sort of a simplified chakra system, and I then did adapt it to the chakra system exactly, going down through the 7 chakras. And then as I reread it, I started going back to his simplified system. He just has 5 energy centers: the spirit center at the crown of your head, the air center that includes then your brain and your throat and entire head. So that's basically
mm-hmm.
the 5th and 6th chakras. Then heart center, which he calls the fire center. That's
mm-hmm.
the 4th chakra, of course. And then he has the water center that includes with him the 3rd and 2nd chakras, and even the 1st, because then he has the earth center that's centered in your feet.
Yes.
So he has a system of 5 energy centers. Either way works, whether you use the 5 or the 7.
Right. It just almost seems simpler to use 5. And the
yeah.
chakra system doesn't, the chakras don't necessarily take into account the feet, which
nope.
is a wonderful grounding, energy that we especially need in today's world.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And I think it's because the chakras were designed by people sitting on the floor, like in a
yeah.
lotus position or something similar, where the Western, his is designed people sitting in chairs with their feet on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're lying down to do it, you can just bend your knees with your feet, and somehow that works better to get the visualization going of the energy going up through your feet, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least it does for me.
Yeah, for me, I just use the corpse posture, my favorite yoga posture, just flat on my back, arms at my sides, slightly out, palms up. And it's true, I full disclosure, half the time I do it, I fall asleep. So much that it's a joke in my family when I say I'm going to meditate. They literally say, oh, yeah, Mark's going to meditate. And they'll make snoring noises. Apparently, I snore occasionally when I'm meditating. And I
well,
do think, you know,
yeah,
maybe half the time I do fall asleep. But the other half, I have a wonderful
problem.
I have a wonderful healing meditation that has really affected the quality of my life.
Yes, well, sleeping is nothing wrong with that.
No. It's very good.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
The word magic is considered almost as controversial as the word lazy, and you have chosen to you've chosen to help people, you know, overcome these hang-ups about these words. You've chosen those two as I bet purposely.
Yeah, maybe. I do say if you have a problem with magic, you don't have to use that word.
Mm.
Just get into the spirit. What the book is filled with are little brief exercises that have a tremendous effect in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you can call it magic. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it self-hypnosis. You can call it creative visualization. You can call it strategic planning. If you're, you know, a business mind, call it what you will, and don't get hung up on the words at all. The words aren't important. It's the spirit behind them. And I challenge people, if they don't like the words I've chosen, try to change the words.
Mm-hmm.
I found this interesting young woman who teaches named Yvette Solar. And she said that her teacher told her that whatever exercise she gave her, she should change something in order to make it her own.
That makes sense.
That's great advice.
Yes,
it is. Whatever I say, if you don't like the words, just change the words, but do reflect on the spirit of it and where it's coming from. I'm saying that there are very simple, brief things you can do that will make your life a lot better.
Yeah.
Put it in your own words. You don't have to call it magic. You don't have to call it anything. Find what works for you. But
well,
whatever
the word
it is,
magic,
do it.
And the word magic is great because it kind of shakes people up.
Yeah, it
and
does.
It's important. It sort of shakes up the... you know, the brain or something, and that's
As a kid, even, I loved the word magic, and I remember when I started to understand, oh, all that stuff on the stage that magicians do, that's all fake. That isn't real magic. And I kept asking, is there a real magic? And all these fantasy books I read and all these movies I saw, I'd say, okay, that's fantasy. You know, Harry Potter... flying around on brooms, that's a fantasy. But is there magic that is really real and effective? Is there real magic? And my subconscious kept saying, yes, there is, and you're finding it, and you're learning how it works. And you don't have to call it magic. You can call it creative visualization. You can call it anything. But we do have within us the power to summon forces that create stuff out of nothing. Call it what you will. You know, I started with no money. I didn't even have a job. I didn't have any family support. And I started visualizing a successful publishing company, a successful writing career and musical career, and a big white house on a hill. And out of nothing, I created all of those. Call it what you will. I call it magic.
Yeah, I love that word.
Yeah. I mean, in the mid-90s, I started promoting, I wrote Visionary Business, and I toured promoting that. And sometimes I would say to crowds, I'd say, you know, you can look at it as all magic. There's simple magical things you can do. You can call it strategic planning too, if you're a business mind. Okay, how did I create my company out of nothing? Well, I made a simple plan, a very simple plan, on one sheet of paper that this is my plan for my company. I need to start a company. I need to learn more about business. I need to learn how to finance a company. And I just wrote it all down and did it. It was very simple.
Yeah, and it's, well, there is something magical about writing down these things, because when you write them down, they do come to pass.
Yes. Yes, the whole first chapter of The Magical Path is all about the power of thought. And that, in my mid-20s, I was given the book As a Man Thinketh by James Allen, which then I edited and called As You Think. But that's all about the power of our thought to create. The second chapter of The Magical Path is all about the power of our words to create. Watch what you say. Those words are creative. The third chapter is all about the power of the written word. Simple plans on paper, simple affirmations. For years, I've been writing, I write an affirmation, I write a sentence that I read that strikes me, and I put it in big letters up on my wall. Like when I read As You Think, I remember the first thing I did was I wrote down a big phrase, stuck it up on my wall in big letters, and the phrase was, "You will become as great as your dominant aspiration. If you cherish a vision, a lofty ideal in your heart, you will realize it." That's from As You Think. I love that quote, because it's...
I did too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Such authority and power in that quote. You will realize it. You will become as great as your dominant aspiration. And as I reflect on it, I think the key word there is dominant. If your aspiration becomes dominant over the doubts and fears that inevitably arise, if that aspiration is dominant, you will realize it.
Right, and it's not to say that the doubts and the fears will not arise. They do, because we are human.
Right, they're inevitable. It's fine. Everybody deals with doubts and fears. Everybody.
Yes. They're beautiful, though, the doubts and the fears.
They are, and they serve a good purpose, and they're part of who we are. And
yes.
So it's just a matter of accepting them. It's one way to look at it, and the older I get, the simpler I see it. We have all these different inner personalities and emotions that arise and thoughts that arise, and it's just letting that dreamer, letting the visionary, letting the inner magician, whatever you call it, the one who makes the plan, let your inner planner make the plan. Let them dare to dream. Put them in charge. And don't let the doubts and fears and inner critics overwhelm the dreamer. Put the dreamer in charge. Your doubter, your inner critic, can be a very good ally. It's like for a writer, that inner critic is a very good editor. But the inner critic is not good for the initial writing, the initial dreaming. You have to put the inner critic aside and just say, I want just the dreamer to be here. I want just the writer. I want to just create this out of fantasy and brainstorm. And I want no inner critic for a while. Just let my dreamer have the lead and let my dreamer dream. Then, once you've dreamed your dream, or if you're a writer, once you've written 4, 5, 10 pages, whatever, you got something, then you bring in your inner critic. Then you say, okay, what do you think? And the inner critic says, if it's a writer, says, oh, the first paragraph sucks, and so does the opening of the second. But here, in the middle of the second paragraph, that's good. That's where you start. And the inner critic becomes a great editor and an ally.
Yeah, right.
So the same thing with the inner dreamer. You get that inner critic to be your ally, to support your dream and help you realize it.
Right. And then the power of the spoken word. Tell us more about that.
Yes. every thought we have and every word we say is creative. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. It's almost as if, Lynette Carroll, Jewel's mom, the singer Jewel.
Yeah.
Jewel's mom and manager. She wrote this brilliant book called The Architecture of All Abundance that we published years ago. And the way she put it is, the universe says yes to every thought and every word. That's how she worded it.
Mm-hmm.
I used to say, you know, this vast subconscious mind says yes. In some mysterious way we do not understand, we are connected with the whole. We're part of the whole vast quantum field. And we affect it with every thought and every word we say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And literally, in some mysterious way, the universe says yes to every thought. So when we dare say, I'm going to go for my dream, I really want to make it as an artist, I want to do this, I want to start this business, this is my dream, and I'm going for it. The whole universe says yes and starts showing us how.
Mm-hmm.
But then if our next thought or our next words are, oh, but it's so hard to succeed, so few people succeed, the universe says, yes, it's so hard for you with that thought, yes. Exactly.
Yes.
And that, I'm sure, is how it works, because I've seen that happen in my own experience. As soon as you dare to dream, you're taking steps toward that dream, and the next step will be revealed. But then when doubts and fears arise, if you let them overwhelm your dream, they will, and you end up realizing nothing, or you realize your doubts and fears.
Right.
So that's where all the work is. It's the essential work is all internal. Like Eckhart says in The Power of Now, get the inside right and the outside will fall into place.
And I think that exercises or meditations such as the middle pillar meditation can really help to transport you into a mindset where you are able to feel just more in sync with what your connections with what it is that you aspire to. You feel more connected to everybody around you, and you have more love, which helps to create this abundance.
Yes, yes. One real simple way to look at it, I have a whole chapter on the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life and the stages of creation that the Tree of Life represent. And I don't have a deep, complex mind. I need to understand things very simply. And once I understand them simply, then they really work in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so my simple interpretation of Kabbalah, what I got from there, is that our bodies do reflect the whole Tree of Life. And everything starts in spirit, in the heavens, you could say, then becomes a thought in our mind, which is more concrete than spirit, a focused thought. Then, once that focused thought becomes more concrete and becomes a focused emotion, and it is the emotion of love, you said it, it's love. Once we have a focused thought that we keep the focused emotion of love behind, then it manifests in reality. But what happens so often is we get a thought and then doubts and fears overwhelm it, thoughts or emotions. Or with many creative people, it isn't even a doubt. They get a focused thought and they think, you know, this will really work. I can make a career doing this. But this will also work. I can do this too. I also have this talent. And there's this one. And they're so creative that they have several thoughts that they end up not focusing on one long enough to manifest it.
Right. That is very true in our technological society. I think we're all sort of ADHD.
Yeah, it's so easy to get distracted into something else. And I see real magic does work, and all it is keeping a focused thought, daring to dream, focusing on that dream, keeping a loving emotion behind it, and seeing whatever steps appear, and the next step will become very obvious and simple to take. Mm-hmm. I never had to make a leap of faith or come to believe in any of this. I never had to make some huge quantum leap ahead, some big scary thing into, you know, in order to succeed. No, I just kept focused on my dream. I want my publishing company. I want my writing career. And the next steps became obvious. And they were always mm-hmm. small, doable, easy steps.
Now, how would you suggest that they deal with the naysayers? I had somebody say something to me this. So I've heard this phrase twice within the last month, and it is, don't blow fairy dust up my ass. Now, I know that that's a little crude, but I've heard it.
Jeez.
I heard it the first time, and I'm thinking, well, And then when I heard it the second time, I thought, I think that the fairy and her dust needs to be empowered in today's world.
Right. And don't blow it up her ass. Shower her. But that's a very good question. And I learned early on that there were certain people I even had to avoid, even my own father.
I'm sure.
It was the day I turned 30, I dared to dream my ideal scene. I even took a sheet of paper, and all this is in the magical pad. I wrote ideal scene at the top. I dared to imagine 5 years had passed and everything had gone as well as I could imagine. Much to my amazement, what spilled out is I have this successful publishing company, even though I don't work too hard. I have success with ease. And I called my dad mm-hmm. and said, I'm starting a company. And his first words were, well, you know, 80% of businesses fail in their first 2 years. And my immediate thought was, oh, I can't share my dreams with this guy.
Yes, yes.
Because I knew enough to know he's reflecting my own doubts and fears.
Well, that's true, too. That's true, too.
I was a total poverty case. Most of my friends were. And I learned quickly not to share my dreams with certain people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're lucky if you have one real good friend or lover that will really support you. And
right.
You don't even need that. But
I was going to say, what happens if you don't have that?
Yeah, if you don't have that, you don't need that. You don't need
yeah.
it. There's, you find it within. It's within
yes.
you. It's your dream. And no one else can have it for you. And people may not see it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is. I had very little support for my dream. I had gone through my entire 20s of failing at everything. Everything I touched fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I had zero track record. So I know my folks were just scratching their heads, just writing me off. And, you know, my dad also said, oh, to start a company, you got to work 60 to 80 hours a week. And he knew I was not willing to do that.
Right.
And so I realized, okay, I can't share my dreams with this guy. I have to just, I fortunately had a friend that supported me. One friend, and we dreamed together. I supported her, she supported me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Was that Shakti Gawain?
That was Shakti, yes.
Yeah.
I supported her in her writing, and she supported me in publishing. And
where the mastermind comes in, isn't it? Where people really help each other with that.
Yes, and it is a wonderful thing to do. I've never had a bigger group than two, but that's all you need. And in fact,
right.
you don't even need that. I can see I could have done it, and I hope I would have done it without Shakti, but having her support was very helpful.
Yes, it's well, I think it's also helpful to realize that there are so many powers beyond what we know. For instance, Julia Asante, you're the woman who wrote The Last Frontier, and you've published the book.
Yes.
That is one of the most wonderful books, as well as, you know, so many of the other books that you publish. It was an amazing revelation to me to realize that the help that is available that we don't embrace or don't even allow into our consciousness is well, we can make the choice to allow it in and
mm-hmm.
to open ourselves to the afterlife. And there is such a thing because she said that there is the difference between us and them. And it's just a fascinating to realize that we have so much help. And by concentrating on just this physical realm, we really lose out.
Yes, yes. An image I often have is we do have, and it's all internal, in our imagination, we have these powerful forces of creation, and we can set them in motion. We'll never really understand them. It is beyond us to understand how it really works. I mean, how did life get started? How did these elements of our bodies that scientists say just started as explosions from stars, and they were simple elements of just hydrogen and helium. How the heck did they end up being DNA molecules in our bodies, you know, forming this group of trillions of cells that work together in perfect harmony and that can communicate with each other like we're doing now? That's all completely miraculous. We'll never understand it. But we can set the forces of creation in motion, and it's very
yes.
simple to do that.
Yes.
Anyone can do it.
It's magic.
It is magic. It is magic, and we're all totally capable of it.
Yes.
We all do it on some level or other.
Yeah,
you know,
and we can empower others to become more in tune with what it is that they've come here to do.
Yes. Yes, yes. I remember when I turned 30, I was living in a slum apartment. I had no job. My rent was $65 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And this is back in the 70s for a one-room slum apartment. And I do remember thinking it was almost magical the way every month I would just come up with my $65. It just, and I look back and I say, oh, that's what I was visualizing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd
mm-hmm.
only have $30 by the end of the month, and then some friend would say, oh, help me move or something. I'll pay you $35. Things would happen like that. Okay, I had my $65. I did meet a wealthy man back then, one of the few wealthy people I ever met, who said to me one time, he just chuckled, and he said, you know what your problem is? He said, you're just scrounging to get your next $100 together. He said, I scrounge to get my next $10,000 together.
Well, the word scrounging to do anything is
right.
kind of bad. It's not the most eloquent
no.
way to go about it.
Exactly. And it was a word we used all the time then. You know, I definitely scrounged through my 20s until I decided consciously to take it up a few notches, to add a few zeros to what I want to create here.
Right, right. And it seems that there are so many different things that are, if you're politically minded in this society in terms of trying to change the world, and, you know, the whole environmental crisis, and it seems that what we're talking about is very helpful for the environmental crisis, that we are all part of Mother Earth, and the Earth and us are, as you had said, the DNA. How did we suddenly become a DNA out of the Big Bang or whatever? And
yeah.
you know, we are reflected in our Mother, the Earth, and there is so much that seems to be people are having a problem because they're not in love with Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems, talking about simplicity, if people could learn to love the Earth by just being
yes.
there in the nature and taking walks and sitting next to a tree, that would change everything.
Yes.
It seems to me. I just had recently thought about that.
No, it's so true. I have a whole chapter in Magical Path on magical relationships, the key to magical relationships, and the key is simple. throughout the book, the way I realize I look at things, when I say magical, it just means the short, direct path, the simple, the one simple thing. What's the one simple thing that makes our relationship better? That's what I ponder and call magical. Mm-hmm. And for relationships, as I reflected on that chapter, I went back to Reanne Eisler's work. Mm-hmm. And realized she really helped me years ago. She first wrote a book called The Chalice and the Blade. The chalice being sort of an anthropological work, the chalice being a symbol of partnership and working together, the blade being a symbol of domination and exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
And then she wrote a book called The Power of Partnership, Seven Relationships That Will Change Your Life, that we published. That book changed my life.
Wow.
And she looks at the seven relationships of our lives. And so one of those is with nature. That's what I had thought about.
Oh, beautiful.
And she says, in every one of these seven relationships, the key is to have a partnership relationship, not any form of domination or exploitation or victimization.
Oh, beautiful.
And,
yeah.
And she starts with the first relationship, which I think is brilliant, is our relationship with ourselves. She said, mm-hmm. Do you have a partnership with all your inner selves? Are you working together? Or do you have part of you that's beating you up? Or is your inner critic out of line? You know,
mm-hmm.
Get your own inner selves together, really supporting you and supporting the dreamer, supporting doing what you love to do. That's the first most important relationship, your relationship with yourself, to have a real partnership there. Then she moves out to intimate relationships, and again
mm-hmm.
saying, is there a partnership there, or is there any kind of domination or exploitation or victimization? Or forget about all that. Make it a partnership, a win-win supportive partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Then she looks at our community and work relationships. It's the same thing. Partnerships are key. She looks at our national relationship. Partnerships are key. International, our country, has been a really good partner with some countries and a total dominator and exploiter with others. Well, the only relationships that have worked over the years have been the partnership ones. That's
mm-hmm.
what works. And then she has us look at nature and spirit at the end, our relationship with our spirit even. But our relationship with nature, is it a partnership? We need to make a wonderful win-win partnership with Mother Earth. So that means sustainable stuff. We need to move towards sustainable living in partnership with the Earth, obviously.
Right. Yes. I've been working with the Amish as a nurse.
That's a sustainable culture.
Yeah. It's, you know, so many times you'll hear people say, oh, they're really far behind the times. They live in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's nothing more amazing than their kindness. And it is true that they don't have any electricity. So when we had Sandy come sweeping through this area of the country, the Hurricane Sandy, they did not have any problems with worry about losing electricity or anything like that. I mean,
right.
And it's just the way that they organize their homes. We go into their homes because we do home births with them.
Oh.
And everything is just so well organized that they make all their own toys for all the children that they have. And everybody is generally, there is a partnership with the Amish. If something should go wrong and, say, a windstorm would come up and blow off the roof of a barn, the whole community comes in, and within hours they build the thing back up. And to talk about partnership and talk about community and talk about real interest in each other,
yeah.
It's just, and then, of course, the no electricity, living off the land, and just being within a rhythm. And just being naturally kind and loving. It's really, I haven't worked with them very long, but they, by far, it's been a real delightful experience in every way.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah. I've taken some video of they don't like their pictures taken, but I like to take video of the horse and buggies going by my car as I'm driving. I know it's a little dangerous. But, you know, that's a culture that we can learn a lot a lot about it, and I know that you may or may not remember, there was a one of those mass shootings that occurred at an Amish schoolhouse right near where I am now working.
Oh, my God.
And it happened maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And what happened there was a miraculous situation because immediately the whole community rose up in support, forgiveness of the shooter. And they took in the shooter's wife and they forgave. It was an exercise in forgiveness, the like of which I have never seen in any of these other situations. You know, there's all this revenge and fear.
Yeah.
You know, the Amish, there was immediate, almost knee-jerk forgiveness.
Mm.
And they're known for this forgiveness. Their ability to forgive is very strong. So that's another thing to learn from that culture. It's just amazing. It really is.
Sounds like they're closer to the words of Christ than most religious communities.
Yeah, it is a true. We had, speaking of magic or maybe miracles, on Christmas Day, we had a baby born to an Amish family who, and the baby was thought to, all the scientists, you know, so-called heavy-duty doctors who did the ultrasound said that this baby was going to die. It was a lethal condition. The baby was born. Now, you know, it had some anomalies in the brain, but the baby was born. It was like this amazing light that came out of this baby's eyes. You know, in the traditions of some of the Buddhist traditions where you do some gazing into the eyes.
Yes.
You could gaze into this baby's eyes for the longest time, and you felt this old soul. Well, and interestingly enough, when the baby was born and it wasn't dying, in fact, the baby's doing very well to this day, the father got down on his knees, and he started to speak to Jesus. Now, I am not by any means, sort of Christian, maybe. I believe in all the religions. But here he got down on his knees and he spoke to Jesus for an hour and a half. He and his wife both did. And, you know, I had to do what I had to do to make sure everybody was okay. But they didn't pay any attention to me. They were speaking to this light that was obviously in the room, and they actually saw this light as Christ consciousness, as Jesus. And I personally have never experienced anything like that before either. That was totally new to me,
yeah.
And it was beautiful. It was a miracle. It was magic. It was just it was a very. And then when I went to visit them a few days later to make sure the baby was doing great, the family was all there. There was so much all through the house. They had signs in the house that said, "Be still and know that I am God." Everywhere. And that was another strange thing. I've been in these Amish homes, and not one time have I seen that. And that is a very, very beautiful mantra.
Yes.
To have.
Yes.
That's, speaking of the mantras that you discuss in your book, that one is always one to think about.
Yeah. That's very powerful.
And it wasn't like they talked about Jesus all the time. They hardly even spoke about religion at all. But it was just when this baby was born and the baby was alive and well, that was when they decided to have a conversation with this, spiritual being whom they lived their lives by. And it was, and then when you went into the home, there wasn't a bunch of talk about Jesus or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah. They were really so, had these beautiful, rosy cheeks, and they looked so youthful and beautiful and, it is just amazing. It really is.
That's great to hear. It really is. So many Christian organizations lose the teachings of Christ along the way in order to protect the organization.
Yes.
You know, and it sounds like they're just still really connected with the teachings of Christ and the presence of Christ. It's beautiful, that story you told, Kate. It brought tears to my eyes.
Presence of Jesus. Yes, they really they lived that. It was a living fountain of light.
Mm.
truly was. It was certainly a gift for me to be able to experience that.
Yeah. And one little book we published was just the words of Christ from the four Gospels. Just we took every word out, the ones that are in red in certain Bibles where it's the actual words of Christ. None of the stories about him, none of the other books, just the words of Christ. And we just put them, took them all and organized them a bit into a little book, The Words of Christ. And talk about simple and brilliant and clear. If you just look at Christ's words, I started saying, you know, if we had a Christian president, if we ever had a Christian leader in this country, the whole world would change, because obviously, if you put Christ in charge of the U.S., well, he's commander-in-chief, well, what would he do with the military? He said, well, Peter, put away your sword. We couldn't have a Christian leader and have military bases all over the world. You know?
No, we couldn't.
No, Christ wouldn't have military bases all over the world. Sure, let's have enough military to protect ourselves. I don't think anyone is going to invade us or anything, but yes, fine, protect our borders. That, I think even Jesus would be fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
But no aggression in other countries.
No.
We should certainly take care of our poor people. And a Christian president would change the entire world.
That's right. Well, I got a kick out of another thing that Julia Asante said, that I was starting to notice in my life that all the religions have different rules. You know, different rules about heaven and hell and baptism, whether you go to hell, whether you don't go to hell, or if you even, well, you can't have an afterlife if you don't accept Jesus Christ as your Savior. And then it's not just Christianity that does this, really. It's all the religions. So I was interested to know if when people died, if they were suddenly relieved of knowing that all that was, you know, that they're free. And she said, oh, some of them get very angry. And and they were like, you know, they lived their whole life thinking and believing in these rules and thinking that if they did something this way, that everything would be okay when they went to heaven or what have you. And then when they pass on, suddenly it wasn't true.
Right.
Oh, I got a big kick out of that. That is one of the best things I ever heard.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, though, isn't it? You have to respect people's beliefs. And if they really want to believe these things, that's fine.
Even if they're completely misguided, yes. I have to. Even my father, we were raised Lutheran, but I, in my teenage years, started to have all these doubts about certain things. And when we were older, he started saying exactly what I'd been thinking for years. And he just started one day saying, you know, I don't buy it that God, who's the creator of this fair human race, would eternally damn them to hell for anything. He said, what parent would damn their own children to an eternal punishment? It's not realistic. It makes no sense.
Yes.
Our belief in hell, I think, is really sadly misplaced.
Well, when you think that a lot of people are already there, it's, you know, when people commit suicide, they really are desperate people. And
yes.
I worked on a suicide line for many years ago. Mm-hmm. And came to realize, I used to think it was a selfish act, but then I came to realize that it was so much desperate, it was very deep desperation to drive them to that.
Yeah.
And that they were in hell to have committed that act.
Yeah.
And then when they committed suicide, they were no longer in hell. I mean, it's probably probably true, unless they were holding their beliefs, you know, going forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough, you know. It's tough for them.
Yeah.
And we certainly, the most important thing any of us can do is to have compassion for all of it. It's so important, opening our hearts to all of it.
I quote Samuel, I think it's Samuel Johnson, some British writer a couple hundred years ago said, "The mind is a place of its own and can create a hell of heaven, a heaven of hell."
Oh, that's a beautiful one.
It is. It's so insightful.
Yes, it is.
True. Some people here on earth have created a heaven, and some people have created a hell.
Yes, yes. And we can see it with certain situations that are happening right now in the world.
Yeah.
And it's tragic. But once again, you know, we have to let go of our assumptions about things. I mean, we really do. And when people die, a good one is when people die, people think that people who are afraid of death think it's the worst thing that can happen is for somebody to die, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and yet it's kind of inevitable for all of us.
And I always find that to be. So when everybody makes these assumptions, there's something so much deeper to whatever it is that's going on.
Yeah. I remember at 15 seeing Hamlet and hearing that line, "There is far more in heaven and earth, Horatio, than is dreamt of in your philosophy."
Yeah.
And it was like a little light bulb going on. Well, I don't even know if I understood it at the time, but I remember wandering around repeating that phrase, thinking about it, and I thought, yes, that's it. There's far more than we can comprehend of the mystery and magic of life,
mm-hmm.
far more. So who are we to say that this is exactly the way it is and to create this rigid worldview?
Yeah.
You know, and opposing other people's worldviews and then arguing with them about it. We're like kindergartners trying to comprehend astrophysics or something.
I saw one, a very simple statement the other day called, and it was, "Perception is opinion." And for some reason that grabbed me. I thought, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And we let go of our opinions and we let go of our perceptions and just enjoy it. I mean, we really have to, the assumptions, the opinions, and the perceptions are what make people
mm-hmm.
arthritic.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm a nurse and I think like that.
Yeah, it could be.
We have
could
to become
be
flexible.
Our inflexible opinions could really affect our bodies and make our bodies inflexible. I agree with that.
So you have a blog. Where can people go? And do you blog regularly?
Fairly regularly. I blog mm-hmm. on newerlibrary.com. I have some on markallen.com, markallen.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some audios they can download, and I do teleconferences occasionally and just did
yes.
a course in The Magical Path that people love. So I'll do that again.
I was wondering if you did an audio of some of the meditations in The Magical Path.
There is one that's been out for years called Stress Reduction and Creative Meditations,
mm-hmm.
and that I incorporated right into The Magical Path.
Oh, good.
And so that's out, Stress Reduction. And then I am now just doing the whole book on audio, so I'll have every meditation on audio soon.
Oh, well, that'll be wonderful.
Yeah, there's a lot of very short meditations in that book. Being as undisciplined and lazy as I am, I've been unable to sustain anything that requires discipline or, you know, even 45-minute periods of meditation or yoga or anything. I've never consistently done anything. So I found what works for me is just little short things, a minute.
Yes.
You know, three breaths. Three breaths is good. I often do a three-breath thing. We can do it right now. I did it just...
Yeah, let's do it.
I did it coming up the stairs right to this interview. All you do is just relax, take a deep breath, And as you exhale, you relax your body from head to toe. Take another deep breath. And as you exhale, relax your mind. Just let all thought go. Take one more deep breath and just let everything go. And relax into the stillness of your being. Feel your presence within. That energy and presence within, that is the world of magical creation. That is the world of divine revelation. It's all within us. So be it, so it is. And that is the plane that you just work on for all this magic. You just dare to dream and imagine, this is what I want my life to be like in 5 years. A 5-year plan is a really good idea. At least it sure worked for me. And you just picture that in your mind, and you ask, what are the first steps to take to reach that reality? And the first steps will be given to you. Ask and you shall receive. I even reflected on that incredible wisdom from Christ. Ask and you shall receive. When I started being successful, I remember grappling with, do I deserve this? And that's the answer I got to that question. The answer, when I said, do I deserve this? The answer I got was, Christ said, ask and you shall receive. Period. He didn't say, ask and you shall receive if you deserve it, or if you've worked hard enough, or if you're good enough, or if you are talented enough, or if you have the right education. Or no, there was no if. He just said, ask and you shall receive. Seek and you will find. Totally definitive statements.
Yeah, did he also say, knock and the door will be open?
Will be open, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, true Christianity is, the living the life of true Christianity is a wonderful, wonderful gift.
It is.
Yeah, it's.
I know, his teachings are brilliant. And
yes.
It is amazing how many people call themselves Christians and ignore the teachings of Christ.
Yes, how can you do this? I don't know. I guess because they're going through a human phase.
I heard a guy interviewed, and they said, what's important to you? And he said, guns, Jesus, and America. And I thought, well, let's see. What would Jesus think about guns?
Oh, my gosh.
Jesus said, Peter, put away your sword. If you live by the sword you die. Well, the swords were the guns of his era. I don't think Jesus and guns go together.
No, not at all.
Not at all. I think he was a pacifist.
I think so.
We have had two great leaders, like Gandhi and I mean, Gandhi wasn't even a Christian officially, but he was far closer to a Christian leader than anything we've ever experienced.
Martin Luther King,
then. I mean, he never had elected office, but Martin Luther King was a true Christian leader.
Yes, and so are many more.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many more. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, we've come to the end of our hour, and I have thoroughly enjoyed this interview. It was wonderful.
Me too.
And thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kate. It has been just delightful talking to you.
It was great. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Let's keep in touch.
Okay, sounds great.
All
thank
right.
you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.